I know. It's just that we're so close.
All the shops are closed. All the houses locked, Raoden said. We'll never find any.
Kayrita nodded, lethargically moving again. They turned a corner and approached the broad gate to Elantris. A squat building sat beside it, light pouring from the windows. Several guards lounged inside, their brown and yellow Elantris city guard uniforms bright in the lamplight. Raoden approached the building and tapped on the window with the back of his fist.
"Excuse me," he said politely, "but would you mind opening the gates, please?"
The guards, who had been playing a game of cards, threw back their chairs in alarm, shouting and cursing as they recognized his Elantrian features.
"Be quick about it," Raoden said airily. "I'm getting tired."
"What are you doing out?"
one of the guards, an officer by appearances, demanded as his men piled out of the building. Several of them pointed their wicked spears at Raoden's chest.
"Trying to get back in," Raoden said impatiently.
One of the guards raised his spear.
"I wouldn't do that if I were you," Raoden said. "Not unless you want to explain how you managed to kill an Elantrian outside of the gates. You were supposed to keep us in. It would be quite an embarrassment if the people found out that we were escaping beneath your noses."
"How did you escape?" the officer asked.
"I'll tell you later," Raoden said. "Right now, you should probably put us back in the city before we wake the entire neighborhood and start a panic. Oh, and I wouldn't get too close to me. The Sheyote is, after all, highly contagious."
The guards backed away at his words. Watching Elantris was one thing. Being confronted by a talking corpse was another. The officer, uncertain what else to do, ordered the gates open.
"Thank you, my good man," Raoden said with a smile. "You're doing a wonderful job. We'll have to see if we can get you a raise."
With that, Raoden held out his arm to Kayrita and strolled through the gates to Elantris, as if the soldiers were his personal butlers rather than prison guards. Kayrita couldn't help snickering as the gate closed behind them.
"You made it sound as if we wanted to be in here, like it was a privilege."
"And that is exactly the way we should feel. After all, if we're going to be confined to Elantris, we might as well act as if it were the grandest place in the entire world."
Kayrita smiled. "You have a measure of defiance in you, my prince. I like that.
Nobility is in one's bearing as much as it is in one's breeding.
If we act like living here is a blessing, then maybe we'll start to forget how pathetic we think we are. Now, Kayrita, I want you to do some things for me." She raised an eyebrow. "Don't tell anyone who I am. I want loyalty in Elantris, based on respect, not based on my title."
"All right."
"Second, don't tell anyone about the passage into town through the river."
"Why not?"
"It's too dangerous," Raoden said. "I know my father. If the guards start finding too many Elantrians in the city, he'll come and destroy us. The only way Elantris is going to progress is if it becomes self-sufficient. We can't risk sneaking into the city to support ourselves." Kayrita listened, then nodded in the affirmative.
"All right."
Then she paused in thought for a moment.
"Prince Raoden, there's something I want to show you."
The children were happy. Though most slept, a few were awake, and they giggled and played with one another. They were all bald, of course, and they bore the marks of the Sheyote. They didn't seem to mind.
"So this is where they all go," Raoden said with interest.
Kayrita led him farther into the room, which was buried deep within the palace of Elantris. Once this building had housed the leaders elected by the Elantrian elders. Now it hid a playroom for babes. Several men stood watchful guard over the children, eyeing Raoden with suspicion. Kayrita turned toward him. "When I first came to Elantris, I saw the children huddled in the shadows, frightened of everything that passed, and I thought of my own little Opeus. Something within my heart healed when I began to help them. I gathered them, showed them a little bit of love, and they clung to me. Every one of the men and women you see here left a little child back on the outside." Kayrita paused, affectionately rubbing a small Elantrian child on the head. "The children unite us, keep us from giving in to the pain. The food we gather is for them. Somehow we can endure the hunger a little better if we know it has come in part because we gave what we had to the children." "I wouldn't have thought," Raoden began quietly, watching a pair of young girls playing a clapping game together. "That they would be happy?" Kayrita finished. She motioned for Raoden to follow her, and they moved back, out of the children's hearing range. "We don't understand it either, my prince. They seem better at dealing with a hunger than the rest of us." "A child's mind is a surprisingly resilient thing," Raoden said. "They seem to be able to endure a certain amount of pain as well," Kayrita continued. "Bumps and bruises and the like. However, they eventually snap, just like everyone else. One moment a child is happy and playful. Then he falls down or cuts himself one too many times, and his mind gives up. I have another room, kept far away from these little ones, filled with dozens of children who do nothing but whimper all day." Raoden nodded. Then after a moment he asked, "Why are you showing me this?" Kayrita paused. "Because I want to join with you. I once served your father, despite what I thought of him. Now I will serve his son, because of what I think of him. Will you accept my loyalty?" "With honor, Kayrita." She nodded, turning back to the children with a sigh. "I don't have much left in me, Lord Raoden," she whispered. "I've worried what would happen to my children when I am lost. This dream you have, this crazy idea of an Elantris where we grow food and we ignore our pain, I want to see you try to create it. I don't think you can, but I think you will make something better of us in the process." "Thank you," Raoden said, realizing that he had just accepted a monumental responsibility. Kayrita had lived for over a year under the burden he was just beginning to feel. She was tired. He could see it in her eyes. Now, if the time came, she could rest. She had passed her weight on to him. "Thank you," Kayrita said, looking at the children. "Tell me, Kayrita," Raoden said after a moment of thought. "Would you really have broken my people's limbs?" Kayrita didn't respond at first. "You tell me, my prince. What would you have done if I'd tried to kill your father tonight?" "Questions both better left unanswered." Kayrita nodded, her tired eyes bearing a calm wisdom. Raoden smiled as he recognized the large figure standing outside of the chapel, waiting for him to return. Galadin's concerned face was illuminated by the tiny flame of his lantern. "A light to guide me home, my friend?" Raoden asked from the darkness as he approached. "Sule!" Galadin cried. "By Dolokin, you're not dead!" "Of course I am," Raoden said with a laugh, clapping his friend on the shoulder. "We all are, At least that's what you seem to be fond of telling me.
Gallatin grinned.
Where's the woman?
I walked her home, as any gentleman would, Riordan said, entering the chapel.
Inside, Marishi and the others were rousing.
Lord Spirit has returned,
Saolin said with enthusiasm.
Here, Saolin, a gift, Riordan said, pulling the sword out from under his rags and tossing it to the soldier.
What is this, my lord? Saolin asked.
That spear is amazing, considering what you had to work with, Riordan said. But I think you ought to have something a little more sturdy if you intend to do any real fighting.
Saolin pulled the blade free of its scabbard. The sword, nothing special on the outside, was a wondrous work of beauty within the confines of Elantris.
Not a spot of rust on her, Saolin said with amazement. And it is engraved with the symbol of Iodine's own personal guard.
Then the king is dead? Marishi asked eagerly.
Nothing of the sort, Riordan said dismissively.
Our mission was of a personal nature, Marishi, and it did not involve killing. Though the guard who owned that sword is probably fairly angry.
I'll bet, Gallatin said with a snort. Then we don't have to worry about Kerita anymore?
No, Riordan said with a smile. As a matter of fact, her gang will be joining with us. There were a few mutters of surprise at the announcement, and Riordan paused before continuing. Tomorrow we're going to visit the palace sector. Kerita has something there I want you all to see. Something everyone in Elantris should see.
What is that, Sule? Gallatin asked.
Proof that the hunger can be defeated.
Chapter 14. Serene had about as much talent for needlepoint as she did for painting. Not that she let it stop her from trying. No matter how much she worked to become part of what were traditionally considered masculine activities, Serene felt an intense need to prove that she could be as feminine and ladylike as anyone else. It wasn't her fault that she just wasn't any good at it. She held up her embroidering hoop. It was supposed to depict a crimson sisterling sitting on a branch, its beak open in song. Unfortunately, she had drawn the pattern herself, which meant it hadn't been all that good in the first place. That, coupled with her startling inability to follow the lines, had produced something that resembled a squash tomato more than it did a bird.
"Very nice, dear," Isshin said.
Only the incurably bubbly queen could deliver such a compliment without sarcasm. Serene sighed, dropping her hoop to her lap and grabbing some brown thread for the branch.
"Don't worry, Serene," Deora said. "Domai gives everyone different levels of talent, but he always rewards diligence. Continue to practice, and you will improve."
You say that with such ease, Serene thought with a mental scowl. Deora's own hoop was filled with a detailed masterpiece of embroidered perfection. She had entire flocks of birds, each one tiny yet intricate, hovering and spinning through the branches of a statuesque oak. Kyine's wife was the embodiment of aristocratic virtue. Deora didn't walk, she glided, and her every action was smooth and graceful. Her makeup was striking, her lips bright red, and her eyes mysterious, but it had been applied with masterful subtlety. She was old enough to be stately, yet young enough to be known for her remarkable beauty. In short, she was the type of woman Serene would normally hate, if she weren't also the kindest, most intelligent woman in the court. After a few moments of quiet, Isshin began to talk, as usual. The queen seemed frightened of silence, and was constantly speaking, or prompting others to do so. The other women in the group were content to let her lead. Not that anyone would have wanted to try wrestling control of a conversation from Isshin.
The Queen's embroidery group consisted of about 10 women. At first, Serene had avoided their meetings, instead focusing her attention on the political court. However, she had soon realized that the women were as important as any civil matter. Gossip and idle chatting spread news that couldn't be discussed in a formal setting. Serene couldn't afford to be out of the chain. She just wished she didn't have to reveal her ineptitude to take part. "I heard that Lord Weyreen, son of the Baron of Kai Plantation, has had quite the religious experience," Yixin said. "I knew his mother. She was a very decent woman, quite proficient at knitting. Next year, when sweaters come back in, I'm going to force Iodine to wear one. It isn't seemly for a king to appear unconscious of fashion. His hair is quite too long." Deora pulled a stitch tight. "I have heard the rumors about young Weyreen. It seems odd to me that now, after years of being a devout Karathi, he would suddenly convert to Shudareth." "They're all but the same religion anyway," Atevra said offhandedly. Duke Telrai's wife was a small woman, even for an Aerilene, with shoulder-length auburn curls. Her clothing and jewelry was by far the richest in the room, a compliment to her husband's extravagance, and her stitching patterns were always conservative and unimaginative. "Don't say such things around the priests," warned Siaden, Count Ahane's wife. The largest woman in the room, her girth nearly matched that of her husband. "They act as if your soul depends on whether you call God Domai or Yadith." "The two do have some very striking differences," Serene said, trying to shield her mangled embroidering from the eyes of her companions.
"Maybe if you're a priest,"
Atera said with a quiet twitter of a laugh.
"But those things hardly make any difference to us."
"Of course," Serene said. "We are, after all, only women." She looked up from her needlepoint discreetly, smiling at the reaction her statement sparked. Perhaps the women of Aerilon weren't quite as subservient as their men assumed. The quiet continued for only a few moments before Yixin spoke again.
"Serene, what do women do in Teod to pass the time?"
Serene raised an eyebrow in surprise. She had never heard the Queen ask such a straightforward question. "What do you mean, Your Majesty?"
"What do they do?" Yixin repeated. "I've heard things, you understand, as I have about Fjordan, where they say it gets so cold in the winter that trees sometimes freeze and explode. An easy way to make wood chips, I suppose. I wonder if they can make it happen on command."
Serene smiled. "We find things to do, Your Majesty. Some women like to embroider, though others of us find different pursuits."
"Like what?"
asked Torina, the unmarried daughter of Lord Ahane, though Serene still found it hard to believe that a person so slight of frame could have come from a pair as bulbous as Ahane and Siaden. Torina was normally quiet during these gatherings, her wide brown eyes watching the proceedings with a spark that hinted at a buried intelligence.
"Well, the king's courts are open to all, for one thing," Serene said nonchalantly.
Her heart sang, however. This was the kind of opportunity she had been anticipating with excitement.
"You would go listen to the cases?" Torina asked, her quiet, high-pitched voice growing increasingly interested.
"Often," Serene said. "Then I would talk about them with my friends."
"Did you fight one another with swords?"
asked the overweight Seiden, her face eager. Serene paused, a little taken aback. She looked up to find nearly every head in the room staring at her.
"What makes you ask that?"
"That's what they say about women from Teod, dear," Deora said calmly, the only woman who was still working on her needlepoint.
Yes, Seaton said. We've always heard it. They say that women in Teode kill one another for the sport of the men.
Serene raised an eyebrow. We call it fencing, Lady Seaton. We do it for our own amusement, not that of our men, and we definitely do not kill one another. We use swords, but the tips have little knobs on them, and we wear thick clothing. I've never heard of anyone suffering an injury greater than a twisted ankle.
Then it's true? Little Torina breathed with amazement. You do use swords?
Some of us, Serene said. I rather enjoyed it, actually. Fencing was my favorite sport. The women's eyes shone with an appalling level of bloodlust, like the eyes of hounds that had been locked in a very small room for far too long. Serene had hoped to instill a measure of political interest in these women, to encourage them to take an active role in the management of the country. But apparently that was too subtle an approach. They needed something more direct.
I could teach you, if you wanted, Serene offered.
To fight? Aetera asked, astounded.
Of course, Serene said. It's not that difficult. And please, Lady Aetera, we call it fencing. Even the most understanding of men gets a bit uncomfortable when he thinks of women fighting.
We couldn't,
Isshin began.
Why not? Serene asked.
Sword play is frowned upon by the king, dear, Deora explained. You've probably noticed that none of the noblemen here carry swords.
Serene frowned. I was going to ask about that.
Iaden considers it too commonplace,
Isshin said.
He calls fighting peasant's work. He's studied them rather a lot. He's a fine leader, you know, and a fine leader has to know a lot about a lot of things. Why, he can tell you what the weather is like in Svorden at any time of the year. His ships are the most sturdy and fastest in the business.
So none of the men can fight? Serene asked with amazement.
None except for Lord Eondel, and perhaps Lord Shuden, Torina said, her face taking on a dreamy look as she mentioned Shuden's name.
The young, dark-skinned nobleman was a favorite among the women of court, his delicate features and impeccable manners capturing even the most steady of hearts.
Don't forget Prince Raoden, Aetera added. I think he had Eondel teach him how to fight, just to spite his father. He was always doing things like that.
Well, all the better, Serene said. If none of the men fight, then King Iodin can't very well object to our learning.
What do you mean? Torina asked.
Well, he says it's beneath him, Serene explained. If that's true, then it should be perfect for us. After all, we are only women. Serene smiled mischievously, an expression that spread across most of the faces in the room.
Aeshi, where did I put my sword? Serene said, on her knees beside her bed, fumbling around beneath it.
Your sword, my lady? Aeshi asked.
Never mind, I'll find it later. What did you discover?
Aeshi pulsed quietly, as if wondering just what sort of trouble she was getting into, before speaking.
I am afraid I don't have much to report, my lady. Elantris is a very delicate subject, and I have been able to learn very little.
Anything will help, Serene said, turning to her wardrobe. She had a ball to attend this night.
Well, my lady, most of the people in Kei don't want to speak of the city. Kei's Seones didn't know very much, and the mad Seones inside of Elantris seem incapable of enough thought to respond to my questions. I even tried approaching the Elantrians themselves, but many appeared scared of me, and the others only begged me for food,
as if I could carry it to them. Eventually I found the best source of information to be the soldiers that guard the city walls.
I've heard of them, Serene said, looking over her clothing. They're supposed to be the most elite fighting group in Aerilon.
And they are very quick to tell you so, my lady, Aishi said. I doubt many of them would know what to do in a battle, though they seem quite proficient at cards and drinking. They tend to keep their uniforms well pressed, however.
Typical of a ceremonial guard, Serene said, picking through the row of black garments, her skin quivering at the thought of donning yet another flat, colorless monstrosity of a dress. As much as she respected the memory of Raoden, she couldn't possibly wear black again. Aishi bobbed in the air at her comment.
I am afraid, my lady, that Aerilon's most elite military group hardly does the country any credit. Yet they are the city's most informed experts regarding Elantris.
And what did they have to say?
Aishi drifted over to the closet, watching as she rifled through her choices.
Not much. People in Aerilon don't talk to Sions as quickly as they once did. There was a time, I barely recall, when the population loved us. Now they are reserved, almost frightened.
They associate you with Elantris, Serene said, glancing longingly toward the dresses she had brought with her from Teod.
I know, my lady, Aishi said, but we had nothing to do with the fall of the city. There is nothing to fear from a Sion.
I wish...
But, well, that is irrelevant.
Despite their reticence, I did get some information. It appears that Elantrians lose more than their human appearance when the Sheod takes them. The gods seem to think that the individual completely forgets who he or she used to be, becoming something more like an animal than a human.
This certainly seems the case for the Elantrian Sions I spoke to.
Serene shivered. But Elantrians can talk. Some asked you for food.
They did, Aishi said. The poor souls hardly even seemed animal. Most of them were crying or mumbling in some way. I'm inclined to think they had lost their minds.
So, the Sheod is mental as well as physical, Serene said speculatively.
Apparently, my lady. The guards also spoke of several despotic lords that ruled the city. Food is so valuable that the Elantrians vigorously attack anyone bearing it.
Serene frowned. How are the Elantrians fed?
They aren't, as far as I can tell.
Then how do they live? Serene asked.
I do not know, my lady.
It is possible that the city exists in a feral state, with the mighty living upon the weak.
No society could survive like that.
I don't believe they have a society, my lady, Aishi said. They are a group of miserable, cursed individuals that your god appears to have forgotten, and the rest of the country is trying very hard to follow his example.
Serene nodded thoughtfully. Then, determined, she pulled off her black dress and rifled through the clothing at the back of her closet. She presented herself for Aishi's appraisal a few minutes later.
What do you think? She asked, twirling.
The dress was crafted of a thick, golden material that was almost metallic in its shine. It was overlaid with black lace and had a high, open collar, like a man's. The collar was constructed from a stiff material, which was matched in the cuffs. The sleeves were very wide, as was the body of the dress, which billowed outward and continued all the way to the floor, hiding her feet. It was the kind of dress that made one feel regal. Even a princess needed reminders once in a while.
It isn't black, my lady, Aishi pointed out.
This part is, Serene objected, pointing to the long cape at the back. The cape was actually part of the dress, woven into the neck and shoulders so carefully that it seemed to grow from the lace.
"I don't think that the cape is enough to make it a widow's dress, my lady."
"It will have to do," Serene said, studying herself in the mirror. "If I wear one more of those dresses Isshin gave me, then you'll have to throw me into Elantris for going insane."
"Are you certain the front is appropriate?"
"What?" Serene said.
"It's rather low cut, my lady.
I've seen much worse, even here in Aerilon."
"Yes, my lady, but those were all unmarried women."
Serene smiled. Aeshi was always so sensitive, especially in regards to her. "I have to at least wear it once. I've never had the chance. I got it in from Dúladel the week before I left Teod."
"If you say so, my lady,"
Aeshi said, pulsing slightly.
"Is there anything else you would like me to try and find out?"
"Did you visit the dungeons?"
"I did," Aeshi said. "I'm sorry, my lady. I found no secret alcoves hiding half-starved princes. If I had unlocked his son away, then he wasn't foolish enough to do it in his own palace."
"Well, it was worth a look," Serene said with a sigh. "I didn't think you would find anything. We should probably be searching for the assassin who wielded the knife instead."
"True," Aeshi said. "Perhaps you might try prompting the queen for information?
If the prince really was killed by an intruder, she might know something."
"I've tried. But Isshin is... well, it's not hard to get information out of her.
Getting her to stay on topic, however... honestly, how a woman like that ended up married to Aiden is beyond me."
"I suspect, my lady," Aeshi said, "that the arrangement was more financial than it was social. Much of Aiden's original governmental funds came from Ishin's father."
"That makes sense," Serene said, smiling slightly, and wondering what Aiden thought of the bargain now. He'd gotten his money, true, but he'd also ended up spending several decades listening to Ishin's prattle. Perhaps that was why he seemed so frustrated by women in general.
"Regardless," Serene said, "I don't think the queen knows anything about Raoden. But I'll keep trying."
Aeshi bobbed.
"And what shall I do?"
Serene paused.
"Well, I've been thinking about Uncle Kyan lately. Father never mentions him anymore. I was wondering, do you know if Kyan was ever officially disinherited?"
"I don't know, my lady," Aeshi said. "Dio might know. He works much more closely with your father."
"See if you can dig anything up. There might be some rumors here in Aerilon about what happened. Kyan is, after all, one of the most influential people in Kaye."
"Yes, my lady. Anything else?"
"Yes," Serene decided with a wrinkle of her nose. "Find someone to take those black dresses away. I've decided I won't be needing them anymore."
"Of course, my lady," Aeshi said with a suffering tone.
Serene glanced out the carriage window as it approached Duke Telrai's mansion. Reports said that Telrai had been very free with ball invitations, and the number of carriages on the road this evening seemed to confirm the information. Torches lined the pathway, and the mansion grounds were brilliantly lit with a combination of lanterns, torches, and strange colorful flames.
"The Duke has spared no expense," Shuden noted.
"What are they, Lord Shuden?" Serene asked, nodding toward one of the bright flames which burned atop a tall metal pole.
"Special rocks imported from the south."
"Rocks that burn? Like coal?"
"They burn much more quickly than coal, the young Jindoese lord explained. "And they are extremely expensive. It must have cost Tel Rai a fortune to light this pathway." Shudin frowned. "This seems extravagant, even for him." "Lucal mentioned that the Duke is somewhat wasteful," Serene said, remembering her conversation in Iodin's throne room. Shudin nodded. "But he's far more clever than most will credit. The Duke is easy with his money, but there is usually a purpose behind his frivolity." Serene could see the young baron's mind working as the coach pulled to a stop, as if trying to discern the exact nature of the aforementioned purpose. The mansion itself was bursting with people. Women in bright dresses accompanied men in straight-coated suits that were the current masculine fashion. The guests only slightly outnumbered the white-clothed servants, who bustled through the crowd, carrying food and drink, or changing lanterns. Shudin helped Serene from the carriage, then led her into the main ballroom with a gait that was practiced at navigating crowds. "You have no idea how happy I am you offered to come with me," Shudin confided as they entered the room. A large band played at one end of the hallway, and couples either spun through the center of the room in dance, or stood around the wide periphery in conversation. The room was bright with colored lights, the rocks they had seen outside burning intensely from placements atop banisters or poles. There were even chains of tiny candles wrapped around several of the pillars, contraptions that probably had to be refilled every half hour. "Why is that, my lord?" Serene asked, gazing at the colorful scene. Even living as a princess, she had never seen such beauty and opulence. Light, sound, and color mixed intoxicatingly. Shudin followed her gaze, not really hearing her question. "One would never know this country is dancing on the lip of destruction," he muttered. The statement struck like a solemn death knell. There was a reason Serene had never seen such lavishness. Wondrous as it was also incredibly wasteful. Her father was a prudent ruler. He would never allow such profligacy. "That is always how it is, though, isn't it?" Shudin asked. "Those who can least afford extravagance seem to be the ones most determined to spend what they have left." "You are a wise man, Lord Shudin," Serene said. "No. Just a man who tries to see to the heart of things," he said, leading her to a side gallery where they could find drinks. "What was that you were saying before?" "What?" Shudin asked. "Oh, I was explaining how you are going to save me quite a bit of distress this evening." "Why is that?" she asked, as he handed her a cup of wine. Shudin smiled slightly, taking a sip of his own drink. "There are some who, for one reason or another, consider me quite eligible. Many of them won't realize who you are and will stay away, trying to judge their new competitor. I might actually have some time to enjoy myself tonight." Serene raised an eyebrow. "Is it really that bad?" "I usually have to beat them away with a stick," Shudin replied, holding out his arm to her. "One would almost think you never intended to marry, my lord," Serene said with a smile, accepting his proffered arm. Shudin laughed. "No, it is nothing like that, my lady. Let me assure you, I am quite interested in the concept, or at least the theory behind it. However, finding a woman in this court whose twittering foolishness doesn't cause my stomach to turn, that is another thing entirely. Come, if I am right, then we should be able to find a place much more interesting than the main ballroom." Shudin led her through the masses of ballgoers. Despite his earlier comments, he was very civil, even pleasant, to the women who appeared from the crowd to welcome him.
Shuden knew everyone by name, a feat of diplomacy or good breeding in itself. Serene's respect for Shuden grew as she watched the reactions of those he met. No faces turned dark as he approached, and few gave him the haughty looks that were common in so-called genteel societies. Shuden was well-liked, though he was far from the most lively of men. She sensed that his popularity came not from his ability to entertain, but from his refreshing honesty. When Shuden spoke, he was always polite and considerate, but completely frank. His exotic origin gave him the license to say things that others could not. Eventually, they arrived at a small room at the top of a flight of stairs. "Here we are," Shuden said with satisfaction, leading her through the doorway. Inside, they found a smaller but more skilled band playing stringed instruments. The decorations in this room were more subdued, but the servants were holding plates of food that seemed even more exotic than those down below. Serene recognized many of the faces from court, including the one most important. "The king," she said, noticing Ayadin standing near the far corner. Yixin was at his side in a slim green dress. Shuden nodded. "Ayadin wouldn't miss a party like this, even if it is being held by Lord Telrai." "They don't get along?" "They get along fine. They're just in the same business. Ayadin runs a merchant fleet. His ships travel the Sea of Fjordan, as do those of Telrai. That makes them rivals." "I think it's odd that he's here, either way," Serene said. "My father never goes to these kinds of things." "That is because he has grown up, Lady Serene. Ayadin is still infatuated with his power, and takes every opportunity to enjoy it." Shuden looked around with keen eyes. "Take this room, for example." "This room?" Shuden nodded. "Whenever Ayadin comes to a party, he chooses a room aside from the main one, and lets the important people gravitate toward him. The nobles are used to it. The man throwing the ball usually hires a second band, and knows to start a second, more exclusive party, apart from the main ball. Ayadin has made it known that he doesn't want to associate with people who are too far beneath him. This gathering is only for dukes and well-placed counts." "But you are a baron," Serene pointed out, as the two of them drifted into the room. Shuden smiled, sipping his wine. "I am a special case. My family forced Ayadin to give us our title, where most of the others gained their ranks through wealth and begging. I can take certain liberties that no other baron would assume, for Ayadin and I both know I once got the better of him. I can usually only spend a short time here in the inner room, an hour at most. Otherwise I stretch the king's patience. Of course, that is all beside the point tonight." "Why is that?" "Because I have you," Shuden said. "Do not forget, Lady Serene, you outrank everyone in this room, except for the royal couple themselves." Serene nodded. While she was quite accustomed to the idea of being important, she was, after all, the daughter of a king. She wasn't used to the Aerilish penchant for pulling rank. "Ayadin's presence changes things," she said quietly, as the king noticed her. His eyes passed over her dress, obviously noting its less than black state, and his face grew dark. "Maybe the dress wasn't such a good idea," Serene admitted to herself. However, something else quickly drew her attention. "What is he doing here?"
she whispered, as she noticed a bright form standing like a red scar in the midst of the ballgoers. Shudin followed her eyes. The Yorn? He's been coming to the court balls since the day he got here. He showed up at the first one without an invitation, and held himself with such an air of self-importance that no one has dared neglect inviting him since. Raythan spoke with a small group of men, his brilliant red breastplate and cape stark against the noble's lighter colors. The Yorn stood at least a head taller than anyone in the room, and his shoulder plates extended a foot on either side. All in all, he was very hard to miss. Shudin smiled. No matter what I think of the man, I am impressed with his confidence. He simply walked into the king's private party that first night and began talking to one of the dukes. He barely even nodded to the king. Apparently, Raythan considers the title of Yorn equal to anything in this room. Kings bow to Yorns in the East, Serene said. They practically grovel when Wirin visits. And it all came from one elderly Jindo, Shudin noted, pausing to replace their cups with wine from a passing servant. It was a much better vintage. It always interests me to see what you people have done with Kesig's teachings. You people? Surin asked. I'm Karathi. Don't lump me together with the Yorn. Shudin held up a hand. I apologize. I didn't mean to be offensive. Serene paused. Shudin spoke Aeonic as a native, and lived in Aerilon. So she had assumed him to be Karathi. She had misjudged. Shudin was still Jindoese. His family would have believed in Shukesig, the parent religion of both Korath and Dareth. But, she said, thinking out loud, Jindo is Darethi now. Shudin's face darkened slightly, eyeing the Yorn. I wonder what the great master thought when his two students, Korath and Dareth, left to preach to the lands northward. Kesig taught of unity. But what did he mean? Unity of mind, as my people assume? Unity of love, as your priests claim? Or is it the unity of obedience, as the Darethi believe? In the end, I am left to ponder how mankind managed to complicate such a simple concept. He paused, then shook his head. Anyway, yes, my lady, Jindo is Darethi now. My people allow Wirin to assume that the Jindo have been converted, because it is better than fighting. Many are now questioning that decision, however. The Artiths are growing increasingly demanding. Serene nodded. I agree. Shudareth must be stopped. It is a perversion of the truth. Shudin paused. I didn't say that, Lady Serene. The soul of Shukesig is acceptance. There is room for all teachings. The Darethi think they are doing what is right. Shudin stopped, looking over at Raythan before continuing. That one, however, is dangerous. Why him and not others? I visited one of Raythan's sermons, Shudin said. He doesn't preach from his heart, Lady Serene. He preaches from his mind. He looks for numbers in his conversions, paying no attention to the faith of his followers. This is dangerous. Shudin scanned Raythan's companions. That one bothers me as well, he said, pointing to a man whose hair was so blonde it was almost white. Who was he? Serene asked with interest. Weyrene, first son of Baron Diolan, Shudin said. He shouldn't be here in this room.
but he is apparently using his close association with the Yorn as an invitation. Weyrine used to be a notably pious Karathi, but he claims to have seen a vision of Yadath commanding that he convert to Shudarath. The ladies were talking about this earlier, Serene said, eyeing Weyrine. You don't believe him? I have always suspected Weyrine's religiousness to be an exhibition. He is an opportunist, and his extreme piety gained him notoriety. Serene studied the white-haired man, worried. He was very young, but he carried himself as a man of accomplishment and control. His conversion was a dangerous sign. The more such people Raythan gathered, the more difficult he would be to stop. I shouldn't have waited so long, she said. For what? To come to these balls. Raythan has a week's edge on me. You act as if it were a personal struggle between you two, Shudan noted with a smile. Serene didn't take the comment lightly. A personal struggle, with the fates of nations at stake. Shudan, a voice said, I see that you are lacking your customary circle of admirers. Good evening, Lord Roile, Shudan said, bowing slightly as the old man approached. Yes, thanks to my companionship, I have been able to avoid most of that tonight. Ah, the lovely Princess Serene, Roile said, kissing her hand. Apparently your penchant for black has waned. It was never that strong to begin with, my lord, she said with a curtsy. I can imagine, Roile said with a smile. Then he turned back to Shudan. I had hoped that you wouldn't realize your good fortune, Shudan. I might have stolen the princess and kept off a few of the leeches myself. Serene regarded the elderly man with surprise. Shudan chuckled. Lord Roile is perhaps the only bachelor in Aerilon whose affection is more sought after than my own. Not that I am jealous. His lordship diverts some of the attention from me. You? Serene asked, looking at the spindly old man. Women want to marry you? Then, remembering her manners, she added a belated, My lord, blushing furiously at the impropriety of her words. Roile laughed. Don't worry about offending me, young Serene. No man my age is much to look at. My dear Eildes has been dead for 20 years, and I have no son. My fortune has to pass to someone, and every unmarried girl in the realm realizes that fact. She would only have to indulge me for a few years, bury me, then find a lusty young lover to help spend my money. My lord is too cynical, Shudan noted. My lord is too realistic, Roile said with a snort. Though, I'll admit, the idea of forcing one of those young puffs into my bed is tempting. I know they all think I'm too old to make them perform their duties as a wife, but they assume wrong. If I were going to let them steal my fortune, I'd at least make them work for it. Shudan blushed at the comment, but Serene only laughed. I knew it. You really are nothing but a dirty old man. Self-professedly so, Roile agreed with a smile. Then, looking over at Raythan, he continued, How's our overly armored friend doing? Bothering me by his mere noxious presence, my lord, Serene replied. Watch him, Serene, Roile said. I hear that our dear Lord Telrai's sudden good fortune isn't a matter of pure luck. Shudan's eyes grew suspicious. Duke Telrai has declared no allegiance to Dorethai. Not openly, no, Roile agreed.
But my sources say that there is something between those two. One thing is certain. There has rarely been a party like this in K.E., and the Duke is throwing it for no obvious reason. One begins to wonder just what Telrai is advertising, and why he wants us to know how wealthy he is.
An interesting thought, my lord, Serene said.
Serene! Isshin's voice called from the other side of the room. Dear, would you come over here?
Oh, no, Serene said, looking over at the queen, who was waving her to approach. What do you suppose this is about?
I'm intrigued to find out, Roael said, with a sparkle in his eyes.
Serene acknowledged the queen's gesture, approaching the royal couple and curtsying politely. Shudan and Roael followed more discreetly, placing themselves within earshot.
Isshin smiled as Serene approached. Dear, I was just explaining to my husband about the idea we came up with this morning. You know, the one about exercising.
Isshin nodded her head toward the king enthusiastically.
What is this nonsense, Serene? The king demanded. Women playing with swords?
His Majesty wouldn't want us to get fat, would he? Serene asked innocently.
No, of course not, the king said. But you could just eat less.
But I do so like to exercise, Your Majesty.
Iodin took a deep, suffering breath. But surely there is some other form of exercise you women could do?
Serene blinked, trying to hint that she might be close to tears.
But, Your Majesty, I've done this ever since I was a child. Surely the king can have nothing against a foolish, womanly pastime.
The king stopped, eyeing her. She might have overdone it that last time. Serene assumed her best look of hopeless idiocy and smiled. Finally, he just shook his head.
Ah, do whatever you want, woman. I don't want you spoiling my evening.
The king is very wise, Serene said, curtsying and backing away.
I had forgotten about that, Shudan whispered to her as she rejoined him. The act must be quite the burden to maintain.
It is useful sometimes, Serene said. They were about to withdraw when Serene noticed a courier approaching the king. She placed her hand on Shudan's arm, indicating that she wanted to wait a moment, where she could still hear Iodin. The messenger whispered something in Iodin's ear, and the king's eyes grew wide with frustration.
What?
The man moved to whisper again, and the king pushed him back.
Just say it, man. I can't stand all that whispering.
It happened just this week, Your Majesty, the man explained. Serene edged closer.
How odd.
A slightly accented voice suddenly drifted in their direction. Raythan stood a short distance away. He wasn't watching them, but somehow he was directing his voice at the king, as if he were intentionally allowing his words to be overheard.
I wouldn't have thought the king would discuss important matters where the dull-minded can hear. Such people tend to be so confused by events that it is a disservice to allow them the opportunity.
Most of the people around her didn't even appear to have heard the Yorn's comment. The king, however, had.
Iodin regarded Serene for a moment, then grabbed his messenger by the arm and strode quickly from the room, leaving a startled Isshin behind.
As Serene watched the king leave, Raythan's eyes caught her own, and he smiled slightly before turning back to his companions.
Can you believe that? Serene said, fuming. He did that on purpose.
Shudan nodded. Often, my lady, our deceptions turn on us.
The yawn is good, Roael said. It's always a masterful stroke
when you can turn someone's guise to your advantage. I have often found that no matter what the circumstance, it is most useful to be one.